What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is actress Mayim Bialik, who currently stars on the hit show The Big Bang Theory, but is also a PhD neuroscientist, an author, and was the star of the TV show Blossom in the 1990s, and played the young Bette Midler in the movie Beaches. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Religion is supposed to be serious business. It's concerned with birth, coming of age, marriage, and death, and even what comes after death. Religion's mission is to instruct children and adults in how to live and what makes for a moral, valuable life. At its core, religion directs us to work to right the wrongs of the world, to improve our character, our actions, and our institutions. Religion is thoughtful, earnest, and significant, focused on matters of the spirit, mind, and heart. Religion is about the things that matter most in life, the relationships, ideas, and acts that endure when the transitory pleasures of this world have ebbed. It is high-minded and action-oriented. It's about making ourselves and our world better through contemplation, exploration, prayer, and moral motivation. Religion matters, and it's supposed to be serious. So, how then do you explain Purim? If the true spirit of religion is those important, weighty things, what are we going to do with a holiday that insists that we celebrate in the silliest ways possible, that obligates us to enjoy irresponsible frivolity and unbridled mirth? A festival whose principal mitzvot include drinking ad delo yada until we lose our ability to think clearly and can't tell the difference between a hero and a villain, whose signature food is a cookie, and whose most obvious ritual object is an irritating noisemaker. Even the text of the Megillat Esther, the biblical book of Esther that is chanted, read, and parodied on Purim, is highly problematic, an anti-feminist tract that features a harem, a beauty contest, lethal court politics, the seduction of a king, attempted genocide, and bloody revenge extracted by our own Jews on Iran. While it's very colorful, ethically, Purim is a mess. What was Mordechai thinking, putting his niece into bed with a drunken pagan king? Why was Esther so cowardly about protecting her own people? Where the heck is God in all of this messy court intrigue, in the backstabbing shenanigans that make even temple board politics seem mild? Why do we have Purim at all? Well, only for this reason. Fun. Joy. Celebration. La'yehudim hayta ora v'simcha v'sason vikar. In their rescue from and victory over the wicked Persian Haman, the Megillah tells us, the Jews had light and joy and complete celebration. We celebrate Purim, which is coming up this week, exactly that way today. Rejoicing and this kind of pure pleasure remind us that life is not meant to be endured, but enjoyed. It's as though even the Holy One, blessed be God, needs a good party now and then. Joy, fun, celebration, that's Purim. And that, too, is what religion is really all about, or at least our Jewish religion. There are two balanced aspects to how we are to complete our Jewish responsibility. One, the Ol HaTorah, literally the yoke of Torah, is how we usually figure things work. Commandment, responsibility, and of course the guilt that comes with failing to live up to what we wish we could be. But the second part, the Simcha Shel Mitzvah, the joy of commandment, is on Purim the commandment of joy, and it's equally important. We must not only act well, but have fun doing it. For God created a world that is full of good things, if we take the time to notice them and enjoy them. light and fun, humor and celebration, sweet cookies and good wine. And for all of us, not just for children, the laughter of a truly unbridled festival like Purim is a wonderful curative for the stress and strain of daily life. We need that relief, if only to remind ourselves that God is indeed good and has given us a world worthy of enjoyment. And so to play us in this morning, here's a wonderful klezmer freilach from the Budapest Klezmer Band called, appropriately, Purim. That was the Budapest Klezmer Band playing their cut, Purim. So the actual holiday of Purim itself is coming up this week, Wednesday night, March 7th, and Thursday, March 8th. My own congregation, Temple Emmanuel, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, will celebrate our own Purim extravaganza show and carnival next Sunday, March 11th. We are elaborately parodying Beauty and the Beast. Our version is called Beauty and the Feast of Purim. And that means it's time to celebrate being Jewish in this most enjoyable way possible. Well, a woman who celebrates her Judaism in meaningful and sometimes public ways is our guest this morning, a repeat visitor who was last on Too Jewish back when she was a grad student at UCLA in neuroscience. She was then best known as the actress who had played Blossom in the 90s pre-teen hit. Mayim Bialik has now featured prominently on the huge hit show, The Big Bang Theory. She has a PhD in neuroscience, a book out on child rearing, and a family of four, and she is still as delightful as ever. Meet her when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. People sometimes ask me if I ever go to other restaurants and try their pizza. The answer is definitely yes. In fact, the other day I went to another restaurant to sample their pizza. So how did it compare to Mama's? Well, first of all, the crust tasted sweet. By that I mean they added extra sugar to the dough. At Mama's, we don't add extra sugar to any of our food. The blend of fresh, natural ingredients we use makes our food taste, well, fresh and natural. Now, there's one more thing I noticed about the other pizza. Based on the portion size and price, I paid about 1.5 times more for it than one of ours. In this economy, that's a pretty big deal. So I guess one reason I try other restaurants is that it makes me realize Mama's Pizza is one of the best. And that's a very sweet feeling. Mama's Pizza with 4 convenient locations. Check them out at mamasfamous.com. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, actress, author, neuroscientist, mom. I could probably go on for a while. Mayim Bialik, best known originally for her lead role in the 90s NBC TV sitcom Blossom and for portraying Bette Midler in her youth in the movie Beaches. She now appears regularly on The Big Bang Theory, my personal favorite TV show, and has guest starred on all kinds of TV shows and in films. She got her bachelor's in neuroscience and Hebrew and Jewish studies from UCLA, the best institution of higher learning in the world, I have to say, my alma mater, and earned a PhD in neuroscience also from UCLA in 2007. She must be the only scientist actually playing a scientist in a sitcom, maybe in the history of television. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, first of all, it's a lot of fun to have you back.
And thank you.
A lot of things have happened since then. Marriage, kids, a revived acting career, authorship. What's the most important thing?
I guess being a parent, being a mom. You know, we have a son who's almost 6 and a half, and we have a 3.5-year-old. If I had to give everything up, including, you know, all of my limbs, I would do it for those children. So that's really the, that's, you know, the cornerstone of my life, and everything else is stuff we do to pay the mortgage and get health insurance and live in Los Angeles. But no, it's truly being a mom is kind of it.
You've really taken that to a great degree. You're a certified lactation education counselor. You've written books about sort of a very different kind of parenting. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I turned a personal decision to parent a particular way. It got picked up on by mainly because I was writing for Kveller.com, which is a kind of hip, irreverent parenting site. In the sort of hipster Jewish community. And I started writing for Kveller and sort of became this unofficial voice of attachment parenting when I don't really think of it as that strange. I have surrounded myself with other parents who parent this way, and it's sort of the parenting style of, you know, organizations like La Leche League and Holistic Moms Network. And I didn't really think there's anything novel or strange about it, but I guess once a celebrity starts talking about it, people are interested. And I wasn't looking to write a book, but I was interviewed by a comedian and author, Teresa Strasser, and she said, I would never want to parent this way, but you make it sound really interesting and you don't sound like a judgmental person. So she said, will you talk to my book agent? And I spoke to her book agent. His name's Anthony Matero, and he said, you have a book here. You have a great voice. And within 4 months, we had this book proposal.
And then a second book proposal. What's more fun, being an author or being an actress?
I don't know. I guess you have to define the word fun. you know, it's different. It's exercising a very different artistic skill. You know, being an actor is being given material that you really don't have anything to do with and bringing it to life. And being a writer is generating a persona to give people kind of a window into your brain. So very, very different. And I'm a musician also, so that's a whole different kind of formulation of creativity. I never really thought of myself as an artist, but as I get older, I do realize that that's really where I resonate, whether it's writing or poetry or visual art or music. They're just all kind of different expressions of this artistic spirit, I guess.
I remember you were in a Jewish a cappella group at UCLA, and I'm just wondering if Amy Farrah Fowler is ever going to, like, break into some kind of a Jewish a cappella song in the midst of the Big Bang Theory.
Well, Bill Prady, our creator and executive producer, claims that Amy Farrah Fowler is not Jewish.
I'm sorry, everybody on that show is Jewish, even the ones that are clearly Baptist.
My husband jokes, but you're playing her. She kind of has to be Jewish. But no, I think that Amy's love for the harp is a very special love, and her love for unusual songs on the harp seems to be kind of her artistic bent, so we'll leave it at that.
Unusual is a good term. We will come back and talk much more with Mayim Bialik, Too Jewish this morning.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmaker's Tynan Neighborhood.
It's the only program of its type in Tucson and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two-bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Among my most pleasant and least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the total Jewish people. This service can involve any one of four different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know anyone who might qualify for the 2012 Kohan Award, just visit our website, kohanaward.com, that's kohanaward.com, and you can find the nomination form there. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com. It's a good visit and a great place to learn about a terrific award and all the recipients.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2jewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at 2jewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there or at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. The Temple Emmanuel Pilgrimage Trip to Israel with Rabbi Sam Kohan is set for May 30th to June 10th of 2012. If you're interested in going with me on this fantastic journey to Israel, email tojewishradio@yahoo.com, tojewishradio@yahoo, or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. You know, recently I was watching an interview with actress-comedian Sarah Silverman and actor Ben Schwartz about a film they were in together, and it struck me how often, when young Jewish people are interviewed by a Jewish publication or a TV show or, you know, a radio show, they talk about the fact that they do not keep kosher. In fact, when identifying what kind of Jews they are, and often they feel compelled to do so based on the fact that they are, you know, Jewish, and somebody Jewish is interviewing them, they almost never say, "My bat mitzvah was a high point of my life," or "Shabbat dinner at home every Friday night, it was so important to shaping my identity." Once in a while, these Jews will mention an experience of summer camp or maybe a trip to Israel, but almost always they start by saying, "I don't keep kosher, but I'm Jewish," or "We weren't really religious growing up," unless they start with, "I've got that Jewish guilt thing." But often it's just, "I'm Jewish" or "I'm very Jewish," followed by a negative note about observance or ritual, and usually food. Mind you, this comes from Jews who already identify as Jewish, who are being interviewed by a Jewish publication or reporter or a radio show, and yet, so frequently, the first thing they say is, "I don't keep kosher, but..." My favorite and funniest confirmation of this stereotype comes from the TV show The Big Bang Theory, on which our guest, Mayim Bialik, is featured as a regular character now. This scene features the character played by Simon Helberg, Howard Wolowitz, who is very Jewish. He is asked by his friend Raj in this scene.
Oh, God, this is good.
Let me ask you a question. Do you believe you're going to go to hell for eating sweet and sour pork?
Jews don't have hell. We have acid reflux.
Jews don't have hell. We have acid reflux, huh? Well, there's another bit on the show where the friends are parceling out their takeout Chinese food, and Wolowitz is told that his sweet and sour pork has gone up $2 in cost, and he says, it's getting harder and harder to be a bad Jew. Well, more of this, if I'm not kosher, I'm not really a good Jew. Now, I personally have a kosher home, and I like the idea of creating a sense of holiness about food, but seriously, have we really raised generations of Jews who don't keep kosher and think that somehow that makes them totally treif? Perhaps it's because of our general Jewish obsession with food, especially good food, but isn't there a whole lot more to being Jewish than whether or not we eat food that arbitrarily isn't considered appropriate in the Talmud? I'm obviously a great believer in Jewish identity, affirmed positively, and food's a part of that. But just because you don't keep kosher, that's not the only aspect of your Jewish identity. There are so many other ways to connect to our magnificent, complex, subtle, and beautiful religious tradition, whether or not your food is kosher. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov, everybody.
And almost Chag Sameach, Chag Purim Sameach.
Chag Purim Sameach, mi shenichnas adar, marbim besimcha.
Absolutely. So there's lots of reason for joy at this time of year and celebration, but there's also some reason for concern. Conference at Harvard on the one-state solution to Israel-Palestine. Let's talk about that.
You know, in many ways, this conference in Harvard, despite the fact that Harvard University did say that it does not represent their official opinions, they're still hosting it. In many ways, that represents a very disturbing approach to Jewish people, because that approach is an approach that says Jews are not a people, they are a problem, and we need to find a solution for that problem. I don't want to use harsh words and talk about other final solutions that people chose for the Jewish people, but it does have the same sentiment to it when you come and say, you know what, let's discuss in an academic style the idea of canceling the Jewish state, having a one state, inviting another 4, 5, 6, 7 million Arabs that define themselves, or we define them as Palestinians or as others, come in, maybe add another nationality of more Arabs that will come in, and basically cancel the concept of Jewish nationality and Jewish state. And the whole idea behind it is an idea that was also represented just lately in a conference by Abbas, the Palestinian Authority, the head of the Palestinian Authority.
President of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas.
When he talked about the inventions of the Jewish people regarding their connection to Jerusalem. So Abbas was talking about the Jewish people inventing so-called history and inventing a connection to Jerusalem. Well, most of us know that the Jewish people have not only a very strong connection to Jerusalem, but also, for instance, in 1880, when the Ottoman Empire did a population study in Jerusalem, there was a majority of Jews in Jerusalem in 1880, before the Zionist waves of immigration of Jews back to Israel. So the whole concept of talking a one-state solution is kind of a whitewashing the idea of denying the Jews their right to have a Jewish state.
You know, of course, it was Mahmoud Abbas who got his doctorate, I believe, by denying the Holocaust. So it's not entirely surprising that even though he's been the sort of soft Palestinian Fatah guy, that he would again say, okay, the Jews didn't really have any place in Jerusalem originally. I saw this conference called the Soft Eliminationist Approach by Jeffrey Goldberg in an article. In other words, it's just another way to say, let's eliminate Israel, get those pesky Jews out of the way, and we'll just do it by making it one big happy state in which Hamas, the Fatah, and all the other Arabs can have the majority, and the Jews will just go along cooperatively.
That's true and true. And unfortunately, I must also point out that on the other hand, the very extreme right-wing organizations, Jewish right-wing organization, are basically pushing in the same direction of leading to a one-state solution, not understanding that that will actually lead
to the end of the Jewish
state.
Right. Thanks, Guy. Well, hopefully we'll have happier things to talk about next week. Chag Purim Sameach.
Chag Purim Sameach.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant at the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Now, this is a really obvious question to ask, but what's cooking at Janos?
Greatness, wonderful food, wonderful flavors, great experiences, beautiful atmosphere, terrific views. That's about it.
You know, I have to say, it is really one of the most magnificent restaurant experiences you can have, not just in the Southwest, but in the world.
Well, thanks, Rabbi. You know, we have three restaurants now, but Janos is the flagship. That's where we put everything into it. All the elegance, all of the love, all of the caring. That's the peak of what we do.
So for a very special night, or just because you want to have a spectacular meal, how can they get in touch with you?
Just give us a call, 615-6100. Go to our website, www.janos.com. We'll be happy to see you.
That's janos.com. Thanks, Janos.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We began speaking last week about Russia and the maybe Russian spring, the conflict between authoritarianism and democracy played out over Putin's continued rule, and its importance of Russia as a, you know, really important country for Jewish life. Still a lot of Jews there. What do we think's really going to happen in this sort of, I don't know, both a psychological conflict for many Russians and, of course, the political conflict?
Well, you know, for centuries, people have lost credibility by trying to predict what's going to happen in Russia. I think it was Churchill who described it as an enigma wrapped in a puzzle, wrapped in a mystery. Yeah. And it's because, in a way, Russia is partially European. It does have its window on the West in the form of St. Petersburg. It's partially Asiatic, in fact, largely Asian, those vast steppes. A lot of the native populations of Russia certainly don't look very European. And so the Russian, the stereotypical Russian we think of with blonde hair, blue eyes, and a little turned up nose is actually a tiny minority of Russians. And Russians with any real experience of democratic life are few and far between. But they're increasingly exposed to models. They have increasing access to TV, cable TV, news media, whatever. They travel more freely. All of Moscow's airports are incredibly busy with sort of the new Russians who have a little bit of money jetting off, even if it's only to Finland, to have an experience and a taste of the West. And they want those things. They're normal people. They don't quite realize, in every case, how to get there. So many of them become even more corrupt and more eager participants in a kleptocracy, and they buy into a government which is anything but accountable, transparent, et cetera, et cetera.
Headed by a former head of the KGB.
Exactly. And, you know, what did they say about tigers not changing their stripes or leopards not changing their spots? Something
right.
like that. Well, that certainly applies here. And Putin obviously had this master plan for basically being in power
forever,
in a legitimate way, quote unquote, elected, but for at least 24 years, which is a long time for one person to be in power
you
in any country.
You would think.
So what's going to happen? Well, we've seen in the recent past in Russia the power of the street. When body bags started coming back from Afghanistan in massive numbers, one of the things that really brought down the Soviet Union was the power of mothers of soldiers marching in the street. And these were just ordinary women, many of whom were nostalgic for the good old days of Comrade Stalin. They didn't necessarily want far-reaching democratization, but they also didn't want their sons coming back dead from a region they didn't care about. So we saw the power of mass movements and mass demonstrations, which the Kremlin has always been afraid of, and that's why they had secret police and why they were so repressive and why they controlled means of communication and why for decades the phone book was considered a top secret document, so you couldn't look anybody else's phone number up. Now that has changed. The sort of glass is cracked and people are realizing their power and they're exercising it more and more often. So I think slowly but surely, we will see a move towards, it won't be even, and it won't always be easy, and it won't always be pretty, but we will see a move towards greater democratization, even if Putin is in power again.
Very interesting, and an interesting, important for the Jewish community, which is now building synagogues and, you know, sort of reviving.
Absolutely.
We will talk much more about this next week. Thanks, Tom. It's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish is a Public Service. Irving takes his wife to a fancy French restaurant. The waiter comes over and says, "The specials tonight are beef lo mein, mushu pork, shrimp fried rice, happy family vegetable, and spicy wonton." Irving looks at the waiter and says, "Hold on, I thought this was a French restaurant." The waiter says, "Yes, but it's a Jewish neighborhood." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and take one from column A and two from column B. This week, we read the Torah portion of Ki Tisah, the story of the golden calf. While Moses is up on Mount Sinai, carving the Ten Commandments in stone, or having God do it for him, the Israelites start to worry. He's not coming back. And so they persuade his brother Aaron to make them an idol of gold, a calf, that they call their new god. Then they throw a big party, a bacchanal, a full-on Mardi Gras in the Sinai. Joshua and Moses hear the noise from the camp below and come down Mount Sinai. When Moses sees the cavorting and the golden idol being worshipped, he throws down the sacred stone tablets, shattering them. The music and dancing suddenly stop. It's a shocking scene. This is one of the most dramatic and, for the rabbis of the Talmud, distressing portions in the whole Torah. The problem is acute. According to the text of Torah, our people witnessed the divine power of the ten plagues, were personally saved at the shore of the Sea of Reeds by God, got the direct revelation at Sinai, in short, experienced God more directly than any other group in history ever has, and then almost immediately turned around and rejected God in order to worship a cow made out of their own jewelry. No wonder the rabbis of the Talmud and Midrash call this week's events the Maaseh HaEgel, the awful story of the calf. How can a people given such a clear set of signs and wonders, including direct revelation and verbal command, only follow the true God for 40 days before pursuing an artificial and bovine substitute? Perhaps the answer lies not in our God, but in ourselves. We enjoy spectacle, are impressed by it, even awed by it, but as soon as it is gone, its effects linger a very short time. What makes us tick as human beings, what keeps us in line, is the very dailiness of regular rules and schedules, the kinds of laws and rituals that are very much a part of practical Judaism. We need both ritual and structure, and until these are provided in a coherent way, we tend to flounder, even disastrously so, as we did in the episode of the Golden Calf. Without a way to connect to God regularly, without prayer and a personal commitment to actually doing mitzvot each day, we lose our ability to be holy, and instead we chase gold, or idols, or both. The message is simply that we need more than grand ideas or sweeping spirituality. We need religion and a Jewish grounding in practice and experience, or we won't be able to remain ethical. Without that focus, we can begin to worship golden calves of every kind. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, actress, neuroscientist, author, and mom, Mayim Bialik, will explain how she does so many things well, including playing the emotion-free Amy Farrah Fowler on The Big Bang Theory show, when we return here on To Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Attention, Arizona taxpayers, you can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. State of Arizona allows taxpayers to receive dollar-for-dollar tax credit, not deduction, for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations. This allows them to provide scholarship for kids in K through 12 at qualified private schools. JETCO provides a quality Jewish education to children in need at Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten, the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy, THA. If you pay Arizona state taxes and make your donation today before December 31st, you'll receive 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax. Your contributions last year helped more than 100 children receive the financial aid they needed to get a Jewish education. Join over 750 supporters who gave up to $1,000 per couple, $500 per individual as a tax credit, and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, please call 647-8442. You can do it on your credit card, 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of Jewish education.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
So they kind of knew it wasn't going to happen. In the pre-Oscar TV interviews, actors Shlomo Baraba and Lior Ashkenazi, who play father and son professors in the Department of Talmud at Hebrew University in the Oscar-nominated Footnote, which last Sunday night became the 10th Israeli nominee that did not get the big prize. Anyway, they were telling everybody who would listen it was definitely going to be won by Iran this year, and they were right. The Hollywood elite, who decide these things, gave the nod to Iran's A Separation, an intense and disturbing family drama, and director Asghar Farhadi took home the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film. Gold statuette in hand, Farhadi dedicated the award to Iranians who despise hostility and resentment, and referred to current tension between Tehran and the West as the film bested movies from Belgium, Poland, Canada, and, must have been sweet, Israel. Look, let's face it, Israel just cannot seem to bring home the golden, neutered Oscar statuette. Perhaps it's because the many Jews of Hollywood, whose notion of cool always skips the Israeli candidate. Most of us thought Waltz with Bashir, Ari Folman's outstanding 2008 animated nominee, would win the Oscar, with its warrior's angst and perplexing memories of bloodshed and mayhem. But no. Even Ajami, the 2009 nominee by Palestinian Skandar Kapti and the Jewish Yaron Shani about an Arab neighborhood in Jaffa, didn't win. And for Joseph Cedar, this is a second blow delivered by Hollywood after his 2007 film Beaufort made it to the final five only to be deprived of the gold. So, Israeli films win in Cannes, they win in Berlin, they win in Toronto, but when it comes to Hollywood, it's gonna be the Iranian guy. Nothing we'll be able to do about it. We should just go up and shake the winner's hand and congratulate him nicely, except we can't do that either, because Joseph Cedars showed up for a photo op arranged for him and Ashgar Farhadi before the Oscars, and the nice, culturally rich Iranian guy did not show up. Anyway, Jews did win a good share of Oscars again. Is it really just the odds at work or something else? Michael, as a novitius who deservedly won Best Director for The Artist, is Jewish, the son and grandson of Holocaust survivors. His loving tribute to Hollywood's silent film era won 5 Oscars, Best Picture, Director, Actor, Costume Design, and Original Musical Score. Film's producer, Thomas Longman, is also the son of famed Jewish-French director Claude Berry. Tying The Artist in Oscar wins, Hugo also has a Jewish pedigree. It's based on the illustrated novel The Invention of Hugo Cabret by the Jewish writer and artist Brian Selznick, and Sacha Baron Cohen stars in the film. We hardly need to mention Woody Allen's win for Best Original Screenplay for Midnight in Paris. Now there's a bad Jew. One of the year's most enchanting and witty films. In other news, Milwaukee Brewers outfielder Ryan Braun, last year's winner of the MVP award in the National League, won another thing: his appeal of his suspension for having purportedly used steroids or some other banned strength-building substance. He now won't miss the first 50 games of the coming baseball season. Look, Ryan Braun is an outstanding ball player and proudly Jewish and by all accounts a nice guy. But the truth is, he got off on a technicality, the slight mishandling of a sample taken during the playoffs last year, and it seems pretty obvious that Braun was using performance-enhancing drugs to help his career along. I guess he is to be congratulated on getting off, the first such appeal of a baseball suspension for PEDs to ever succeed. But it doesn't make this particular passionate Jewish baseball fan very proud at all. At least Braun didn't claim anti-Semitism prompted the suspension originally. In happier news, the Tel Aviv Museum of Art's Herta and Paul Ami building won the Best Museum Award from Travel and Leisure magazine for 2012. Mazel tov to this fascinating and beautiful structure in Israel's art capital. And finally, after the recent apology by the Mormon Church for performing the Baptism for the Dead ritual on dead Jews, in which the Latter-day Saints promised to stop the practice, which was followed by the news that a Mormon temple in the Dominican Republic baptized Holocaust victim Anne Frank yet again, TV comedian Stephen Colbert had the obvious solution to resolve the problem. Colbert has announced he will now be converting all dead Mormons to Judaism. Turnabout is surely fair play, no? Especially during the week of Purim. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back our delightful guest, Mayim Bialik, best known originally for her starring role in NBC's Blossom back in her very young youth, and then played a young Bette Midler in the movie Beaches, now stars on The Big Bang Theory on TV, certainly the smartest television show on the air, if not the smartest television show everywhere. She's also an author of 2 books on attachment parenting, and multi-talented in many ways.
I only have 1 book out.
Well, I just like to inflate things. Don't they do that in Hollywood a lot?
I appreciate it, but no. But this is my first published book, so.
Mazel tov. When you became a mom, parenting is obviously a very complete experience for you. Were you still working in the early stages? How old did you feel was like old enough? Your kids are still pretty young.
You know, my husband and I had a very, you know, different trajectory than a lot of, you know, young parents, in that we were both in school when we had our first son. So we were both in graduate school, him for American politics and me for neuroscience. And we made the decision once I was done with my coursework, and was into data collection for my thesis, that's when we had our first son. And so I basically edited and did, you know, data analyses for my thesis, literally breastfeeding an infant. So I finished my thesis, and my husband and I kind of took turns. I mean, once you're done with coursework, you're pretty much, you know, editing, and I was mainly home, you know, writing for all that time, and I wrote when he was sleeping and when he was napping on me, and we got pregnant with our second son the week that I filed my thesis. We call that the Mazel Tov baby. And so I took my doctoral hood 8 months pregnant. And honestly, my husband and I were planning on kind of tag team teaching, perhaps, or I was tutoring. I started tutoring neuroscience, and that's something I still do in our homeschool community. But, you know, the decision to go back to acting was really kind of, let's see if I can work a little bit here and there, kind of to fill in and get us health insurance and all that stuff. We were really just kind of, you know, two graduate students. So I started auditioning when Fred was close to one, but you know, as I tell it, we all went in the car, the four of us. Our toddler at that time was three, and we would all go in the car to all my auditions, and Fred, the baby, would be screaming the whole way. I'd breastfeed him, and he'd scream when I was in my audition, and I'd come right back out, and we'd drive home, and he'd scream the whole way home because he hated the car. And I was very publicly made over on what not to wear, and then Fred was with me for that whole experience. He was 9 months old, so I really started kind of doing more auditions after that.
Wow. Well, it's. I was thinking, as pregnant as you were when you got your PhD, it's a good thing that those gowns are kind of loose-fitting.
Exactly, and I said better to take your doctoral hood pregnant than your high school, you know.
Yes, gowns. Yes, than your high school graduation. Absolutely. You know, I remember watching The Big Bang Theory, and they were talking about, oh, maybe they could get that girl from Blossom who has a PhD in neuroscience to be on the show. And I thought, oh, yeah, Maya Bialik, I remember. That would be great. And then a couple, I mean, was that intentional?
No, I mean, I'd like to think I have that kind of command of the show business industry, but no, I got the audition for Big Bang Theory and auditioned with a bunch of other really talented, competent women, and, you know, I got the part that afternoon. On my resume, it says miscellaneous PhD neuroscience, and Bill Brady looked at that at the audition and said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yes, I didn't know where else to put it. I have a PhD."
Wow, so really it was Beshert.
I guess so. I mean, you know, I like to say, see, my degree wasn't for nothing.
So you consider yourself conservadox, or at least that's what you've been typed. Talk about your own Jewish practice, your experience of, I mean, obviously on this show you get to dress as modestly as humanly possible, but...
Yes, and Sneas doesn't have to be frumpy, but my character definitely makes it such. you know, I was raised Reform. My mother was raised Orthodox and kind of left Orthodoxy, but I was raised with some leftovers, you know, some remnants of her Orthodoxy, but was raised in a very positive, pleasant, you know, Reform environment. I went to camps here in Los Angeles during the school year through the Bureau of Jewish Education, but I did become, I took on more observance in college. Rabbi Chaim Seidler Feller at UCLA was my rabbi.
He was the Hillel rabbi at the time, of course.
Yeah, it was my first introduction to really the world of modern Orthodoxy. And I guess that's kind of more where I resonate. You know, I don't use the word modern Orthodox out of respect to people who are modern Orthodox, since, as I've written very publicly, my work schedule does not always allow me to live halachically the way I would like to. Fortunately, we don't tape on Shabbat. We tape on Tuesday nights and not Friday nights. But there's a dozen yontifs in the fall that I can't always guarantee that that I can observe the way I want to. So, you know, I'm a person who believes strongly in the practices of Taharat HaMishpacha. I believe in Torah living. I believe in learning. I believe in Shabbos. I believe in Kashrus. And that's just sort of where my head is. But as I said, out of respect to the larger Orthodox community, I don't wave the flag of Orthodoxy. And, you know, God willing, one day we'll all be able to do exactly all the things we want to do. But for now, I do the best I can, and I try and be open and honest about it so that there's no confusion.
You know, you said in an interview, not on Too Jewish, but it's okay, that you'd like to set your taping schedule around the 8,000 Jewish holidays you want to observe according to halacha, but being a Jew in Galut, a soul yearning for its way home, you're also a happily employed actress on The Big Bang Theory, can't quite do that. So you have some creative ways of managing to affirm Shabbat and festivals. That sounds very Reform to me, speaking as a Reform rabbi.
Oh, well, I think there's a lot about, you know, all kinds of Judaism, you know, that that definitely embrace that. But I think for me, you know, I believe in the system of halacha. I believe in the application of halacha. And, you know, although it's not a perfect system, that is still where I, you know, where I, as I said, where I resonate. So, you know, I think that modern Orthodoxy is a lot more progressive than I thought it could be, and that's been a pleasant awakening. And there's certain aspects of Reform Judaism that I hold very dear to me, and Conservative Judaism as well. But you know, when I'm, you know, asked about sort of dividing issues, I guess the sort of halachic lifestyle really suits me well at this point.
Do you think you are the first sitcom star who used the mikveh regularly?
Yes, perhaps I should put that on a bumper sticker or a T-shirt.
I can see a whole separate cottage industry growing here. This is big stuff.
That's very funny. I mean, I speak a lot about mikveh. I speak for I'm speaking for, you know, Reform community this spring about mikveh. I speak for all sorts of communities about mikveh. And for me, it's not so much to make people believe, you know, in Taharat Mishpacha and in the mikveh, although that's a wonderful, you know, thing that sometimes happens. But I think it's a great example of something that I had a tremendous amount of, you know, terrible misperceptions about, and once I started studying and learning, it was really one of the first introductions to me into the depth of Jewish learning. When I studied Rabbi Arya Kaplan's, you know, Waters of Eden, all those things were a real awakening to me about how we can learn about things. It doesn't mean we have to agree with them or do them, but that this is our tradition, is to really get very, very, very deep.
So speaking about learning, your thesis title, I looked this up, hypothalamic regulation in relation to maladaptive, obsessive, compulsive, affiliative, and satiety behaviors in Prader-Willi syndrome. I got most of that correct.
Yep.
So is that going to pop up in a Big Bang episode? Or do you read to your kids to put them to sleep?
They have my character doing... she does addiction studies, and she apparently works with animals, which, you know, I'm a vegan, so that's not cool by me. But
no.
they also have Amy sometimes talking about research in human emotion, which I think is funny because she has such, you know, kind of strange emotions. But I think the idea is that Amy must work in a large, you know, kind of neuropsychology, neurobiology lab that has collaborations, because she does a couple disparate things. But I don't know if hypothalamic secretions will make it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that I'm not sure is going to be a cottage industry in T-shirts. What's your favorite part about the show?
Oh, gosh. I have a lot of favorite things. I think, you know, being an adult actor is something I've never done before. You know, this is really new to me, and to be part of kind of a sitcom family as an adult. I mean, I love working for Chuck Lorre and Bill Prady and Steve Molaro. Those are our executive producers. We have an incredible group of writers and producers who honestly are just the neatest, most intelligent people. It's not at all what you'd think a group of sitcom writers look like or act like, and it's really amazing to be part of a creative process that is so complicated. But I think also on a more personal level, I love working with Jim Parsons. You know, it's been a real highlight of my career to work with an Emmy Award-winning, multi-award-winning actor who's so gracious and humble and really teaches me a lot, and that's such a wonderful thing to really like the person that I base my character on.
Do you get to have any input in the way that your character changes over time?
No, and I don't want to. You know, I'm an actor. I do what you put in front of me. You know, I'm happy to give input if you need to know which structure of the brain is in charge of fear or pain or memory. But no, I save my writing for Kveller, and I save my writing for books. And otherwise, you know, and also when people ask me, like, did you like how, you know, the tiara scene turned out, you know, the scene that got a lot of attention.
Right.
And I said, no, my job is performing, not watching TV. I'm not paid to sit in front of my television.
Okay,
so once I do it, I'm kind of, I guess, done.
I want to thank Maya Bialik for a great visit here on Too Jewish. And keep watching The Big Bang Theory, folks. Thanks, Maya.
Thank you so much. Shavua Tov.
Shavua Tov. It's a pleasure. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none.
From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be the outstanding author, Alice Hoffman, who wrote The Dove Keepers. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or on our TooJewishRadio.com website and like us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from an Israeli a cappella group, the Fountainheads of Ein Prat, parodying Pink's big hit, Raise Your Glass, a song that almost doesn't need new lyrics to be about Purim, by the way, since it's about drinking and celebrating just like Purim. It's called Raise Your Mask for Purim, coming up this Wednesday night and Thursday and continuing next Sunday with our big extravaganza and carnival at Temple Emmanuel. My friends, have a great day. A Chag Purim Sameach, a happy and joyous festival of Purim, and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
Here comes the story of Purim. And it goes a little something like this.
Persian king looking for a queen, prettiest girl you've ever seen, Esther Winzio. Haman's evil fools the king, bow to me, I'll dig my ring. Jews don't go so low. Evil master getting nastier, planning for a big disaster. Jews are worried, what's the story? Mordechai sacks his clothes.
So raise your mask, if you are praying on the right way. Show your right way, right way. Never be anything but true. And always straight out, bold and fearless Jews.
Won't you come and come and
make some noise?
Just come and come and
stamp your feet.
Won't you come and come and
raise your glass?
I can do this, I'm not afraid. Okay, here goes.